There are some very important differences between these papers, and there's one thing that they have in common, which is probably not been discussed in any detail in any one of the papers. The thing that they have in common that I want to talk about is their concern with studying the North, the methodology, the problems, the history of the North as it is not written into studies and as it is written into studies. I think in that sense, you look at Usher's paper where he looks for the roots of the kind of studies that have been done. You look at Valaskakis's paper to look at why the North appears to have no history prior to the last 10 years. And you look at Steve's paper to see some of the conditions under which recent research has been undertaken. But let me first make a short statement on the Tussing paper, because it is very different from the other three. While Tussing is talking about uneven development, he does not see uneven development as structural rigidities or problems which are located and in the development process itself and which determine the directions that development can and will take. Essentially, what he views uneven development with as a problem in growth. The tone of his paper is generally optimistic, and he views state spending as mediating the impact of such uneven development. And I want to ask a question with this, because I can't go into any of the details of the analysis here. Is this difference between the Tussing paper and the other three because Alaska is part of the metropole? Or is it simply a somewhat premature, and I would suspect unrealistic, assessment of the development process and growth around resource industries? As I say, I would argue the second, and I suspect, though he isn't here to comment on it, Innes would agree. Let me speak to the commonality. It's important to set these three papers in a context of what I call one of the newest growth industries in Canada, that is, the industry of studying the North. The question we have here is, what do we mean by an Innes tradition of research? And is the Innes tradition of research responsible for what I think is a sharp differentiation that can be made between the papers presented here and, for example, the 10 studies of the Far North that recently appeared in the Journal of Communications. Now, let me say a little something about those 10 studies, because they're not in front of you here. They were conducted in the Baffin Island region. They are similar to studies which were conducted by the DOC and by the DIA. Essentially, they are impact studies. In this case, the 10 studies were about the impact of television comparing communities that did have television with communities that didn't have television, but they're very similar to studies conducted by the DOC, which compare the impact of satellites on medical services or the impact of pipelines on various other social conditions or interaction patterns. Now, the interesting thing about these 10 studies is that they would also claim to be in the Innes tradition. And that must mean that there are two notions of an Innes tradition. What we have here in the three papers are detailed historical studies integrating political, economic, and cultural data, fully cognizant of the interplay of vested interests. In those studies, very specific studies, locating patterns and processes which are recurrent. And the Innes legacy is not a theory, but basically a methodology from which theoretical insights emerge. The Usher study could perhaps be expanded with a background to the political history of the North. The Steve study could perhaps look more deeply in the role of different modes of production within the Yukon. The Valaskakis study could perhaps include, and probably should have included, more of a discussion of the Hudson Bay Company. But the second approach pulls a theory, or a kind of theory, out of Innes and uses that theory as a framework through which to view the data. And the theory has been called, occasionally, the metropolis hinterland theory, and sometimes it's been called dependency theory, and sometimes it's been called control theory, and sometimes it's viewed as mass technology coming in and imposing certain kinds of ways on local cultural tradition, and sometimes it's simply a reification of the concepts of space and time.
Now, it may be obvious, or it should be obvious, that I'm partial to the first, and partly because I believe that is where the richness of the Innes's own work lies. And all three of these studies, though Usher's less than the other two, are in the tradition of the first model. But let me look at the other reason why I prefer the first as opposed to the second notion of what is the Innes legacy to future research. I think there are certain real traps in the second approach. The first is to reify the concept of metropolis hinterland, that if in listening to the papers yesterday to get a sense that the relationships of control and how that control is mediated are much more complicated than a simple notion of dependency metropolis onto hinterland, that there is also a relationship back, and that how that control is exercised is worthy of a great deal of study and not something which can simply be compressed into a notion of metropolis hinterland. And the second thing which is related to that, or the second point that I think is a trap in viewing Innes as theory, is that it tends to reduce the political aspects of development, the analysis that's so rich in Innes, to a simple notion of extension of control. That the only thing you're looking at is how the metropolis, the only politics you're looking at, the only details of how political forces and vested interests interplay are how control is exerted on the marginal areas. And the third thing, the third trap that I see in the second approach is something I call the before and after syndrome. And I'll take the television studies in the North as a perfect example. They tend to view the North as a social laboratory, here's a community that doesn't have television, and here's a community that does have television, and we'll go in and we'll do some attitude surveys that measure how violent people are, or whether or not they lock their doors before and after. And I think that is an unethical, at best, approach to the North or to any peoples anywhere, to view them as a before and after social laboratory. But the second thing that they do is they tend to have a kind of technological determinism. And if I have a critique of the Valaskakis paper, is that in the last section, the section which didn't get presented to you today in the television section, there was a sense that television kind of came in out of nowhere, that it was the technology which is imported, not the people which import technology, not the interests which make sure the technology goes there in the first place. And that bias is in all of the DLC studies, where you talk about satellites going into the North as if there were not satellite companies taking those satellites into the North. In the early part of the Valaskakis paper, she talks about the role of the missionary, and she talks about the role of the church, and she might well have talked more about the role of the Hudson Bay Company. In that part of the paper, she avoided the notion that literacy or that script itself was a determining factor. In the television part, which you didn't hear, there's a feeling that it's the television got there on its own. Well, of course, it didn't. Okay, fourth point, or fourth trap, is a point that Steve makes, which is that to view Innes's work as a theory makes distribution technologies like roads itself themselves generative of change. And I think that's anti-Innesian. I can use that kind of word, that certainly while roads, and it's argued, like transportation routes, are linked to specific patterns of development, there's nothing to say that the construction of a road, or say in the DOC studies, the use of a satellite will themselves generate the change. There's much more to it than that, and there's a much more interplay of issues of politics and economics and interests that doesn't get written into those studies. And finally, just a small point, the last trap that I'm talking to is a kind of a dichotomy that gets raised quite often out of Innes between regionalism, the local culture, and nationalism, i.e. the metropolitan area, that somehow if only the metropole would go away, then local culture would flourish. And it does get played out even provincially, you know, in terms of BC versus Toronto, and people use that kind of model and a so-called Innes model to explain why we in BC don't like Toronto, and that seems to me a fairly vacuous approach.
Okay, I more or less used up my time. I'd like to go back to Innes and just look at 3 points very, very briefly that seem to me to speak towards the first interpretation of what the Innes tradition and research should be about. And the first part is to look at what I think Innes viewed technique as. Carrie talked yesterday about technique as being, as about Innes as having come very much out of a Chicago school. And I found that in looking at Innes, when I looked for the how he was using the notion of technology and technique, that it was related very much to the pragmatic school of Chicago, and that the influence was very, very strong. And I'd like to read you a very short paragraph. Innes began with a pragmatic sense of human activity. Culture, he claimed, is concerned with the capacity of an individual to appraise problems. Activity is itself an essential characteristic of human beings. Activity is problem solving. Adaption and resistance to control are essential human characteristics. Technology is viewed by Innes as an extension of activity. It is instrumental. Like the activity of which it is a part, it is grounded in specific social and economic conditions, tied to relations of production, kinds of markets, vested political and economic interests. Technological systems function as an integral part of production, are developed to meet the needs of specific forms of production, and contribute to the maintenance of control. At the same time, they can be used in claimed as weapons of resistance. New technologies like radio extend the reach of American empire across national boundaries. They also decentralize information and are developed at the periphery of empire. The second point that I'd like to make is how tremendously productive Innes saw conflict as being, and that's something that even isn't part of the papers here today. And the third thing I'd like to make is a general comment on the term empire. But as I read Innes, empire means nothing more than the institutionalization of power. And yes, America is an empire, and yes, Europe was an empire. But if you go through a lot of Innes, I think you can argue that there are other forms of empire and that we're not looking at a parallel between imperialism and empire in any direct sense. And so to look at extensions of empire in the North as simply extensions of the American empire and think that you're covering all of what Innes had to say about empire may in fact be misleading.